This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
It's not just Amazon with the big competition for a second big campus. I'm David Brancaccio in New York. You missed the 2018 National Pizza Week and National Meat Week, both in January, but National Chocolate Week isn't until October. So to tide you over, this week has been designated World Trade Week, as in trade, stuff, services, money going back and forth across borders. The Commerce Department this week is honoring 43 U.S. exporters. 33 of them are small or mid-sized businesses, but it turns out small businesses in the U.S. could be exporting more, a lot more. Marketplace's Nancy Marshall-Genzer explains.
According to the Small Business Administration, just 1% of small businesses in the U.S. export.
The American market is just so large that many companies are comfortable here.
Clayton Duby directs the U.S.-China Institute at USC. He says, with such a big U.S. market, many small businesses feel they don't need to export.
And they've been able to be successful here.
Duby says small and mid-sized U.S. businesses don't have separate departments dealing with foreign clients. They may not be able to get financing. And Phil Levy, with the Chicago Council on Global Affairs, says the uncertainty caused by the Trump administration's trade skirmishes is especially hard if you're a small business.
By the time you deliver a product or ship it, what will the policy environment be? Will you be facing 20% tariffs?
Levy says Mexico is the biggest market for U.S. small businesses, so they're caught up in the uncertainty over NAFTA. In Washington, I'm Nancy Marshall-Genzer for Marketplace.
And over the weekend leading into this World Trade Week, Treasury Secretary Mnuchin said the China tariffs are off and the brewing trade war with China is, quote, on hold. Yet, the U.S. trade rep, Robert Lighthizer, later said China tariffs are an important tool. We're also covering that today. If you miss it on the air, it's in the Marketplace Morning Report podcast feed. Apple is said to be closer to announcing the location of its second corporate headquarters, if that's not an oxymoron, headquarters. There are indications Raleigh, North Carolina may be on track for the $5 billion campus, but that could attract protests given that state's record on LGBT rights. Marketplace's Renata Sego is following this. What do we know about Apple jobs in North Carolina?
This project's really attractive to any state because of the jobs that could come along with it. If indeed Apple does decide on Raleigh-Durham, the company would be reportedly creating about 5,000 jobs in the state at first, and then that number could double to 10,000 down the line. Government officials in Raleigh say they're offering up a tax break, too, for the company if it does choose the region. But really, given the controversy over the so-called bathroom bill, it's just unclear at this point what Apple will do.
And remind us, where do things stand in North Carolina over this bathroom bill?
Lawmakers originally passed that controversial bill back in 2016. It required that anyone who was transgender use the public bathroom based on the sex on their birth certificates, not their current sex. That drew a lot of ire from transgender advocates who called the rule discrimination. The state legislature later rewrote that law a year later, back in 2017, and did away with that specific mandate. Instead, the state legislature wrote a law restricting local governments from making any future decisions about bathrooms. That same law keeps local governments from passing any sort of non-discrimination ordinances, too, until the end of 2020.
All right. But it's not over till it's over. And other rival areas of the country are still hard at their efforts to attract Apple?
Exactly. We've got Sydney, Nebraska. That city's expressed interest in hosting the campus. So has Orlando, Florida. Apple's already said it's expecting about $38 billion in repatriation cash from the new tax law. And part of that money is going toward expanding operations and promising jobs.
All right. Marketplace's Renata Sego. Thank you.
Thank you.
The Kroger supermarket chain says it's closing about 40 stores around the country. Many are in neighborhoods the U.S. Department of Agriculture already regards as so-called food deserts, where decent food is hard to find or expensive. Kroger says these closed stores weren't making money. Georgia Public Broadcasting's Grant Blankenship looks at what comes next.
Like a lot of people in Macon, Georgia, Sean Williams can afford groceries. She just can't afford a car. That's why I met her on a dirt footpath in front of Macon's now closed Kroger store near her apartment.
I had to get my groceries little by little and tote them home like an ant.
You can see a convenience store a block away. Williams is not excited about shopping there. Take a box of Cheerios. At Kroger, she says she could get it for about $2.50. At the convenience store?
They'll charge me $4. The convenience store, I always gonna jack up prices.
Throw in the lack of fresh produce and you got your basic food desert. So how could Macon, Georgia fix this? The community might look to Dayton, Ohio.
If the last couple decades have taught us anything, it's that these kind of third-party corporate entities are not rooted in our community.
That's Leela Klein, executive director of the Greater Dayton Union Co-op Initiative. When a Kroger closed in Dayton in 2009, labor organizers, local clergy, and other activists proposed to run a grocery store in the Kroger space. Klein says city officials didn't like that. They said,
do your homework. You know, figure out if you can really make this work.
9 years later, the community is pulling together a cooperative grocery. The Gem City Market will be about half the size of a Kroger, stocked based on neighborhood food preferences, and owned and operated by the customers and the employees. No corporate owners, no shareholders in far-off places who might decide to shut down.
When it makes business sense for them to close, they're going to close.
The Gem City Project is raising money for the Dayton store, but it's not built yet. Meanwhile, other groups are delivering groceries to Dayton food deserts to pick up some slack. On a national scale, Walmart and Amazon continue to push grocery delivery, and Kroger is investing more on the delivery front. Back in Macon, it's now a four-mile walk for Sean Williams to the next grocery store. In Macon, Georgia, I'm Grant Blankenship for Marketplace.
Kroger also hit the news the other day by buying a stake in a British company, Ocado, that has a fancy system for delivery of online grocery orders. Will Kroger's emerging system cover the food desert? Something we'll be watching. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.